Hey there, Danny with Right Foot Down. I messed up this ad read so many times because I really want to tell you about Track Monkey Apparel. They make great quality, enthusiast shirts along with hats, stickers, watches, patches, you name it. A couple of my personal favorites are their Life is Better at the Track tee and their One Track Mind tee. You should really check them out and see for yourself. Their products are great for you or the gearhead in your life. Visit trackmonkeyapparel.com.
You're listening to the Untitled Car Show in partnership with RightFootDown.com. Visit RightFootDown for your daily automotive fix. If you enjoyed today's program, please tell a friend. It's the best way to support this show. If you want to visit the archives, go to YouTube and search for Untitled Car Show. That'll bring you to the archived episodes. If you want to follow this show, just search for Untitled Car Show on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can always send an email to the show at untitledcarshow@rightfootdown.com. We're so glad you decided to spend the next hour or so with us. Without further ado, let's get into today's program. Welcome to the Untitled Car Show. I am your host for the evening, Ike. I am joined by... I guess you're Right Foot Down's newest contributor, Jacob. Is that right?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Jacob came in. You've written a few articles over with the Right Foot Down crew, and you've written some mostly for Opposite Lock. Am I right? Have you written for anywhere else besides that?
No, just started on Oppo, and then what was that? Probably 2 or 3 months ago now. It's kind of time flies, but. Had my first article come out, and since then it's just been one generally every week in the last few weeks. As you understand, you get busy and stuff slips by, but I try to keep pretty constant. So,
The summer months always feel like the summer is going to come and I'm going to have time to do shit, and then it comes and it goes like that time that you thought was going to come always disappears. So it's fun. So. And if I'm not mistaken, you've been on the show before, I think on a couple of group call-in episodes?
Yeah, I think I've been on 2 group calls. So yeah. Mm-hmm. It was fun times. I came back, so that's a good sign.
Well, I'm going to say that's, the second date's the important one. If they show up for the second one, first date, everyone gets a first date. Second date, that's proving you're not messing up too bad. So I must be doing something right, I suppose. Or you're just that cheap of a date. So, and Defender of Lexus. So we got a couple of Toyota people now on. I don't know how I've managed to surround myself with the defenders of the Japanese stuff. But it's interesting. So let's kind of take a step back and let's go into... our questions. We always go to our Inside the Actor Studio questions where we can kind of get to know you as a car person, and the people listening can maybe get a better idea of who you are. It helps if I have these things pulled up. This is called vamping while I try and figure out where the hell I put my notes. I think I would have these all figured out by now, but let's go with the first and foremost and most obvious one. What is your favorite car?
This one's always a tough one because it's pretty much going to be a Toyota or a Lexus. I've just been around them so long, but I'm gonna have to go with like probably one of the cars I want the most is a 1982 FJ40 with factory air. Like, it's just an absolute dream car of mine, and that's probably the thing I love the most. Is they're rugged, but I live down here in Tennessee and it gets extremely hot. I think we were looking at like 90 degrees with 80% humidity a couple days ago, and so I just dream of having an FJ40 with standard air, and it's the last year of those, so get a little bit of everything. Of course, the manual transmission.
Of course. What is your least favorite car?
Nissan Rogue. I don't have to think about it. I think you saw me complaining about it in the Skype chat the other day. Mm-hmm. They're notoriously bad, and again, living in Tennessee, I actually live just south of Nashville in the Nissan North America headquarters. Moved here about 5-6 years ago. So I'm subjected to Nissan Rogues on a level unprecedented, I would say.
Mm-hmm. The worst part about the Nissan Rogue is until you notice them, they're such a bland vehicle that you never notice them. So,
notice them because they always cut me off.
Well, that too. Yeah. Especially when you get them for cheap.
Or the high beam in the back. Yeah. The high beam in the back is probably the thing that's killed me the most on those.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because what's your daily driver?
So I have an LS400. It's a 98 LS400. Mm-hmm. It's got 27,000 miles on it by now. It was my first car. I've had it for 7 years now. And I went and bought an ISF, a 2011 Lexus ISF, which is the first year with the daytime running lights. And funny enough, the nicer suspension that copes better on the road. And I still end up driving that LS400 almost every single day of the week. It's a nice place to be.
Mm-hmm. It's back when it was really a luxury car brand and not so much a competitor to the Germans. So, it was what the Japanese thought Americans wanted, given the fact that Americans were still buying Cadillacs back then. So
exactly.
So what modification?
This is the 98.
Yeah.
So that's the nice thing about it is it's the 98. So it's got the more round headlights and it's got the more round taillights and it doesn't have an antenna. So it's just, it's absolutely one of my favorite looking LS vehicles ever too. Because the first one's definitely aged, and then this one. So I think you're going to say modifications on the LS.
Well, I was going to say what modification trends, maybe that you don't want to do to your own vehicle, but you see and you enjoy.
So what I've done up with mine is I think it's called Stock Plus, is what a lot of people refer to as. But so I put 17-inch wheels on my LS400 from an LS430. And that really changes the look of the vehicle because the Japanese are notorious for putting extremely small wheels on their vehicle up until recently, basically. That was kind of one of the first things we did was I think my dad was walking out of a Discount Tire and a guy had just put some 22s on his LS430 and my dad offered him $100 and he got tires and wheels for $100. They've been on that car ever since.
Well, that worked. Well, is there anything that you see out there in the wild that you find yourself like really attracted to? Maybe something where you don't have the time or inclination to do it to your own vehicle, but you really enjoy, looking at and seeing that type of vehicle on the road?
So, not stance per se, but lowered is kind of one of those things that I don't want to deal with it. It makes rides rougher and all these things. And it's funny because I went to – the first time I actually started to appreciate it was I went to Import Alliance down in Atlanta earlier this year. And I just kind of understood it at that point. It's just like donks. Like it doesn't make sense to some people, but you just kind of come around and go, that's their culture. I mean, there was a guy at Cars and Coffee with a donk. And I'm just like, what else are you going to do with a Malaysia or a barge? It's perfect.
Yeah.
That's what you could do. That's what you do with those. So, I think just kind of big wheels with skinny tires. I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah,
but I love the way they look.
So then, what is your least favorite modification trend?
I think the stance to the level that it hits, like if you're hitting hitting the bottom of the car. Going over expansion joints on the interstate and stuff like that, or when the tires, like 1% of the tires actually touching the ground, just because at that point it's no longer a modification and it's dangerous. It goes the same way when you go up, like of course living in the South, big trucks, and a lot of these guys are taking these F-250s, which stock already three times the height of any vehicle on the road, and then they put 45, 50 inch tires or stupid stuff. I'm not kidding. Seen that big of a tire. And with a 3 foot lift on it. And it just, it's dangerous again because it's, you can't see anything with it and anything you hit is dead.
So. Yeah. Well, what I find fascinating about that too is a lot of them don't understand that if they hit anything, now their point of impact is their tires and their, suspension components. So realistically, you might T-bone a car and your wheel is hitting the car, and so is maybe the bottom of your oil pan, but the rest of your vehicle and chassis is going to go over top of that because the only thing holding it on is four bolts at this point. And that's almost as dangerous to the person in the big old lifted vehicle as it is to the person they're hitting. So
yeah, I mean, you see these dash cam videos of a car will get T-boned, and it's no longer a Honda Civic T-boning a Toyota Camry or something. It's now a Honda Civic T-boning a Honda CR-V, and the CR-V driver, I don't know if they overreact or if it's, I think it's a combination of they overreact with the steering wheel input, which is hard to react correctly when you get T-boned, but the car immediately flips three or four times.
Yeah.
And that's, it's the high thing, and it gets worse as you get taller. And then yep. You get up to monster truck size, and you're pretty much dead because all that weight is on top of the cap, which was not designed for it.
Right. Especially, I don't think that IIHS does the roof strength testing on anything bigger than an F-150 anyway. So, which is fascinating, which the South is, they got their own set of problems when it comes to the modification things. So, what car is the car you dread to be stuck behind at a red light?
Oh, gosh, what was it? I think it was a Nissan Murano yesterday. Just in general, it doesn't seem like Nissan, I think, is putting out good products right now, but the buyers aren't usually the best. I think I've seen articles where it's like the highest amount of subprime, Nissan gives the highest amount of subprime loans. Like higher than any other manufacturer, and it tends to draw some of the people that are not as good of drivers.
Yeah,
where they're on their fifth car in a year, and the Nissan Altima always has a donut on it. So
yeah,
but I don't know what it is, but it's kind of one of those things.
What I love is the fact that they're calling the people who drive them morons. I don't know how you manage to get a car in America and call it. He's a moron, no? Like, yes, see, it's good. Moron, no? Yeah. Saying you're not intelligent. See? Excuse me? Like, who came up with... It's crazy to me that was a thing. What automotive sound or noise do you love?
Naturally aspirated V8s.
That is a good one. What automotive sound or noise do you hate? This one's tougher, so I'll give you some examples people tend to say. So brake squeal is a pretty common one. You know, fart cans is a pretty common one. But
yeah,
sometimes it's just jingling.
Brake squeal is probably one of the biggest ones. And then, like, if any kind of vibration happens squeaking in any of my cars. Like, yeah. If you hit a bump and everything squeaks, it's just like, ugh, it's the worst. It is probably the worst thing.
Especially when it's a new squeak and you're like, I don't know where that came from.
Yes. Yeah, and there's, I think the ISF has one, because my ISF's nearing 70,000 miles on it at this point, and it's in the dash right above the AC unit. And I was on clublexus.com, and I'm not the only one that has it. So I'm gonna have to get the car over to the shop and use my dad's plastic tools and really tear into it and figure out what it is and put some double-sided tape on it. Because that is, it's only when it's hot, so it's an interesting squeak, but it's always there.
Yeah, well, if it makes you feel better, my 2014 Fiesta has a clicking noise whenever you turn on the HVAC because build quality is fantastic in those things.
Blower mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not even the blower mode. It's the door that kind of selects where the heat and cooling comes out of. The recirculation thing just goes, mm-hmm. and it does it for 5 seconds. It always freaks everyone out the first time when they're in the car, and then by the fifth time they even forget.
Oh, so it's loud then too. It's not just like a subtle noise. It's like that's awful.
Yeah, it's bad. Ford, fix your shit. But they're like, well, it doesn't affect the car. It's just annoying. Like, thanks. But the Fiesta ST, other than that, is a perfect car. So let's see. I'm going to give you a choice of two cars. You have to drive this car as your only car for the rest of your life. And you're not allowed to modify it beyond how I have already modified it for you. So would you prefer a FJ40 stanced to within an inch of its life? So we got ridiculous camber coming out. You know, the wheels are basically driving on the side of the vehicle. Or would you take a Nissan Rogue? Are you taking a leak right now? Because that's a bit what it sounds like.
No, I have an automatic sink, and I bumped it. Yeah, it's awful. It's wonderful because you just stick your hand under there, but I was just messing around with the sink and it turned on accident. My bad.
That's the first time that's happened on the show. So, okay, an FJ40 stanced within an inch of its life. So we got wheels driving on the side of the, you maybe got like a half an inch of contact patch on the side of the tire, or a Nissan Rogue that has been it's nicely stock plus. It's been lowered ever so slightly. It's all very well tastefully done.
I've seen FJ40 rat rods, and as much as I like going off-road, it actually does look fantastic. So I think I'd have to go with the FJ40 just because it has a cool factor.
I mean, you're going to be going through rear differentials in that vehicle constantly. Like, you're going to basically every pothole that you come across, you're going to be like, well, it's time for me to go get a new rear diff. But I appreciate
it. But it's an FJ40.
I get that. So,
and what did you say when I started? I'm a Toyota apologist.
So, no, I get the brand loyalty. I get the, love of kind of like what you grew up around, because it's something weirdly, as I've gotten older, I've kind of gotten away from myself. I used to be a big Chevy guy, and then I got into Saturns, and then I was all about Volvo for a while, and then it was Fords. But as I've kind of gone through these progressions, it's become less and less loyal to a specific brand. But there is something nice about kind of, if you're a sports fan, you get to cheer on your team, even if, maybe the people on it aren't the best people sometimes. I speak as someone who lives just outside of Baltimore, so I've seen people rationalize a lot of crazy shit. And, well, he was probably there when the guy got murdered, but he didn't really murder the guy. And then the other side of the aisle with people going like, yeah, those guys are terrible, but our quarterback definitely didn't rape a girl. That didn't happen. Like, all right. But, like, I like Ford, but Ford did build a product that caught fire and killed a lot of people. So not going to say they're, darling angels. Although, that's a good question, too. We're going to go a bit off track off our little Inside the Actor Studio questions here. But what manufacturer do you think is the most saintly? I think you have a bit of an idea in your mind, but I mean, like, you can't say Mercedes, for example, because you go back into Mercedes history and there's any of the German manufacturer, you're going to be digging up some terrible stuff, especially Volkswagen, both in the 1940s and in more recent years with Dieselgate. So, I mean, is there a manufacturer out there that's basically had a spotless or maybe who has the most spotless history in the automotive world?
Well, it's going to be towards Toyota.
Yeah.
Well, I think Toyota's done good. I mean, they haven't really. I think the only thing that they've really, other than, let's see, airbags are not their fault, and the runaway quote unquote runaway vehicles were not really running away when you start diving into it. And then if they did run away, I've owned a Toyota for 7 years. And I can get, I'll get into that story of why I'm a Toyota person. But all you have to do is put it in neutral. And my dad and I have both even tried it where, well, I know you can put it in neutral because I do it on the interstate all the time. but the other thing is the brakes override the gas every time. I've tried it with an ISF. I've tried it with an LS400. I've tried it with a GS300. I've tried it with a Tundra. It overrides every time. So I don't understand what was happening there and why those people sadly passed away. But the way I was going with the most saintly is probably going to be like a Saturn or an Edsel, because they didn't have time to do anything wrong.
Yeah, I get that. But
unless
I feel
you
like...
start getting it into, like, they belong to Ford or they belong to GM, which have had ignition coil issues or all that kinds of fun stuff. But
Well, Saturn had the ignition problem, because I actually had a Saturn. I had the Ion. I didn't even realize it at the time.
Oh, that's right.
I think I've told the story.
There
where
was my answer.
Well, yeah. Well, see, this is why it's good for conversation. See, because when I had my Saturn back before I knew anything about cars, I used to put the key in, turn on the car, and then actually pull the key out of the ignition switch or the ignition lock and put it in the cup holder. And people were like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, this is where I put my key after I start the car. I'm like, you shouldn't be able to do that. I'm like, well, this is what I do. And I remember someone convinced me that doing that was going to cause me to die in the car. So I put the key back into the ignition, and I was driving from Chicago to Normal, which is about a 100-mile trip on a pretty deserted highway. And I hit a big bump, and the whole ignition, like, cut off on me. And, again, I'm probably, like, 20 years old at this point. I know next to nothing about cars. And I'm smart enough to go, okay, put it in neutral, put the key, start it. Like, I have no steering right now. It's a good thing I'm on the interstate. Like, hit the, like, bring it back to start. Everything comes back on. And then I continue driving. And then I just go back to taking the key out and putting it in the cup holder. So... It's strange.
What about
strange. Tata? See, that's an interesting one, too. I don't know enough about them, and I don't want to cast dispersions here, but I assume a lot of the, you know, manufacturers in, like, third world countries probably have a pretty spotty human rights record, maybe? Like, maybe some industrial stuff?
I know they probably don't get paid very well, but... And relative to everyone else in that region, it might be decent. But
yeah.
I might give it to Tata just because they've kept it quiet enough that we don't know. And then they bought Jaguar Land Rover, and they've kind of almost fixed them a little bit. Saved them for Ford.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, it's a good point. Hold on one second. I'm getting a bit of a goof coming on here, so just hold on one second. Everyone listening, be right back. Sorry about that, everyone. It's just a little bit of a technical glitch with the system today. I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, the Tata's an interesting one. I couldn't tell you too much about Tata other than they're Indian and they own Land Rover and Jaguar. It is an interesting argument, though. I mean, when you look at... I mean, you could go to the point of saying maybe Subaru's the most saintly because they literally got hit with an A-bomb and they still build just decent cars for the people who bombed them. So there's that.
Well, that's a good point because Subaru also has the zero-waste plants and, like, a couple of them, too. Down here in the south. I think they're down here somewhere.
I know there's one in Indiana. That's about all I know about them.
What are they, 49% owned by Toyota or something? I don't remember where that was from. Or they're owned by a company that owns... They're related to Toyota somehow, and that's not the 86. And the BRZ.
Yeah, that's the... if you get into Japanese manufacturers, it's crazy how Japanese industry is all interconnected in a weird, crazy way, which
Fuji Heavy Industries owns everyone, and
yeah, and like Mitsubishi's everywhere, but not really. And then like, everything's mixed with everyone. Well, that's an interesting. Hyundai and Kia are probably not good examples of it. Basically, anyone who hasn't built weapons of war is probably pretty high up there on the list. So
yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. I would say so.
Yeah,
I think Toyota's worst defense might be the fact that the straight six that Toyota used at first was copied off of the Chevy straight sixes that powered the fans in the factories after World War II.
You know what? I'm going to go with Toyota can't be that high up there, because what vehicle do you always see a terrorist driving around in?
Well, that's not Toyota's fault, though. You're going to make me go Toyota apologist on this. They've literally like, what was it? Toyota's like, I think Toyota did an inquiry. They're like, how the heck are these people getting our vehicles? And it just turns out that the terrorists know to buy them from auctions in the United States. So that's just something that says Toyota's reliability is if terrorists trust it, you can trust it too.
Yeah,
because you know who else uses? Do you know who else uses Toyotas?
Who's that?
The UN. The UN uses Toyotas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's that aspect of it, but so they're supplying both sides of the
Well, they're warfare. Not supplying. They're not supplying the terrorists. The terrorists are, yeah, they're making their way. They're making their way down there.
I say if we're it's going, like, yeah,
it's like Smith and Wesson didn't supply the Mexican cartels. Fast and Furious didn't help.
Right.
Just like the auctions in the United States did not help Toyota supply them. It meandered its way over there.
I mean, true. I get what you're saying, but I think if you're going like,
Like that vision, like what they look like.
Well, I mean, like,
Let's just give it to Subaru.
I think Subaru probably deserves it. Although someone's probably going to be like, well, actually, did you know Subaru built like blah, 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 and that was used for da, da, da. You know, we can't give it to Subaru, though, because of all the flat brims, like all those guys. Again, it's not Subaru's fault.
Subaru did build the Brat. And for all that, for that, all sins are forgiven.
That is true. It's a vehicle so good that Ronald Reagan had to hide the fact that he had two to get elected.
At the Lane Motor Museum, I'm going to give a plug. So one of my favorite places in the world is here in Nashville. It's called the Lane Motor Museum. If you haven't heard about it and you're a car guy, shame on you. If you're a car guy and you haven't visited it, if you've been anywhere within 3 hours, shame on you again. But Jeff Lane is the president of the foundation, and he is an amazing man who just knows freaking everything. And right now the Lane is hosting an exhibit called Subaru 360. And they've got, I think the Lane has 6 or 7 Subaru 360s, everything from the truck to the van to the sedan to the whatever else Subaru 360 they have. But on top of that, Subaru of North America lent them a brand new STI in World Rally Blue, and they lent them the Subaru X100, I think is what it's called, and it was like the 100 mile per gallon attempt by Subaru.
Oh yeah.
And then on top of that, the first ever Subaru Brat ever built is there. And it's beautiful. I think it's tan with orange roll bars, an orange brush guard, and orange graphics down the side. And it's just, it's one of the most beautiful things in the museum, and it's a freaking rat. So,
yeah.
And of course, because it's called Subaru 360, all the Subarus are put in a circle.
Well,
which made me laugh.
Yeah.
Go visit the Lane if you haven't before.
Yeah. The Brat is such a wonderful, weird piece of like, It's that wonderful culmination of like geopolitics meeting like supply and demand needs of like a consumer market, and like it's like, how do we get around all this bullshit? Well, you put some seats in the back of the pickup truck and pretend that people are going to sit back there.
Yep.
Yeah. It's so nutty.
I think that's what it was, is they got around the manufacturing because they shipped the seats to the dealer. And since the dealer, quote-unquote, installed the seats in the back of the truck, it was then partly manufactured in the United States, thus meaning it was no longer chicken taxed.
Well, it was that and the fact that it wasn't then a utility vehicle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because that's the same issue Ford's having right now with all the transits, is they're built in Europe, mm-hmm. and they're shipping them over here to the States, and they're shipping them
as utility vehicles.
Yeah, they're shipping them over with seats in them, and then when they get here, they take the seats out, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Geopolitics, it's fun. When it comes to, does Toyota make a commercial van for the United States right now? I can't think of one. I know.
No, they do not. They don't make anything commercial other than base Tundras. And when my dad has a 2014 Tundra, we went on the lot and there was 8 1794s and 5 Platinums and nothing else because the dealer did not get anything else except $50,000 to $60,000 trucks.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's crazy to me how expensive trucks have gotten when it comes to that.
Well, and those trucks are built in America too, so they don't even qualify for chicken tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything with heated and cooled seats should not apply. And it's
true.
Wonderful, again, in the South, is having cooled seats on a work day.
Yes. Yes, ventilated seats are a godsend to the Tukas. I don't know why it's glitching out. I know it's nuts, but we're back to it. So anyway, work trucks, pickup trucks, they're all getting super expensive. I was thinking, though, there is, I believe it is Toyota, they sell a minivan, the Sienna, and they have one of the most wonderful options, I think, out there. I want to do a whole thing about this. They have like a great seat if you have like a person with a mobility disorder. It actually like physically like comes out the side of the car and basically like rests a captain seat on the ground next to the vehicle. So if you have like an old person trying to get in and out, or if you have like someone who's like mobility impaired trying to get in and out, it's the easiest thing. It takes like 30 seconds for the seat to move in and out of the vehicle, and it's wonderful. And I don't know why they don't advertise this more often. So, if you have someone with some sort of disability, look into this, and you don't have to pay like that much. I think it's like a $700 or like $1,000 option. And like if you needed a vehicle modified for that, like from, you know, one of these third party people, you know, you're looking at like $20,000 or $30,000 for like a wheelchair ramp and all that stuff to get up. Like when they do the Dodge Grand Caravans and all that stuff to modify it, it's crazy to me, like, the amount of, like, sense that makes. So if you got someone, look into this. Which, again, I don't know why Toyota would not market that fact, but whatever, especially in this day and age. But so let's get into a bit of why are you such a Toyota apologist? We've seen you, you know, well, terrorists aren't like really buying Toyotas, and like, you know, like, yeah, joking a bit here, but you know, it's, you know, there's obviously a love affair of Toyotas, and there's probably, you know, family history of it, and like, why, I guess, is the big thing.
Well, that's exactly what it is. So, it's kind of funny. I learn more and more things about my dad every day, but I think, what was his first car? I want to say it was the Dodge Dart, but the Plymouth version.
Satellite? No.
No, it was something else. Yeah. I think it started with a B. He'd kill me because he just told me all these stories. But so my dad went through a million cars, including he had a Super Beetle, but the Super Beetle didn't have a clutch for a year and didn't have reverse for 2 months. And he learned how to drive it without a clutch and without reverse. And then he's had Volkswagen Foxes. I think the earliest car I remember, it's kind of funny because my dad's had, so the car I remember being in first was a Mazda, I think it was a B2000 is what it's called. But they're just, it's like a 1988 or something, Mazda pickup truck. But the vehicle that's always been there is my dad has a 1975 FJ40. And he, when we were in California, we did all kinds of four-wheel drive trips. We went up to the Sierra Nevadas, went out to Pismo Beach, went out to the desert, just did a whole lot of trips. And before that, it was he had a Blazer. So he was known as Broken Blazer because his Blazer, his Chevy Blazer always broke. And then he had an FJ40, broke the FJ40 in one of the drainage dishes near his house, and then put it all into this one, which it's kind of funny. This FJ40 actually has a Chevy 350 small block in it. This FJ40 is kind of rough that he has. It's got 35-inch tires. It's like a 6-inch lift. It's meant for off-road. It's got a huge roll bar on it, and then of course the 350. But one of the things people always talk about with FJ40s is the fact that they have the drop-down side benches. That was taken out. Well, I'm 23, so it was taken out 23 years ago, and replaced with a bench seat. Because I was born, and it still has that bench seat to this day, which we have the fold down seats, but they're in kind of rough condition. But that's the vehicle that made me fall in love with cars was that 75 FJ40 with a 350 small block in it. Let's see, fast forward 5 years. I think my dad started working at Toyota in the late 90s. In Central California, and at that point we had the Dodge Chrysler, or not the Dodge Chrysler, the Chrysler Town & Country. It was green with the gold trim, which is probably the best color combination of any of those. And then he had that red Mazda B2000. Somebody's gonna yell at me because it's probably not called a B2000, but it's something like that. And I'll get Matt angry tweets. So fast forward again, and I think the first brand new car. Oh, this is a good oppo. I was brought home in a Volvo 240.
Well, there you go. So you should like Volvos. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and I like the new ones, and I think it's kind of funny. I always say this, but I think I'm trying to convince my wife to get into a new Volvo when she's ready, because I want a wagon. Of course. But
don't
the,
we all?
Yeah, I know. I want more wagons. Everyone needs to build wagons. Where am I at? So the first new car my dad ever bought was he leased a 2005 Toyota Tundra, double cab SR5 with leather, four-wheel drive, just an amazing truck. Like, the fact that it had, like, I think 220-something horsepower just amazed me. This was in 2005, when that was actually still alive. And my mom bought a brand-new Camry, which is kind of funny because I've actually hated that Camry since day one. It makes her sad because she knows I don't like that Camry. But it's a four-cylinder XLE. But I've always hated it. And it's kind of developed that way. My dad is a Toyota Master Tech and a Lexus Master Tech. And then in 2006, he opened up his own business, servicing mostly Toyota and Lexuses. And that's here in South Nashville area. So I've been kind of around Toyotas as long as I can remember. Because that Lancruiser was there, and then the Tundra, and then the Sequoia, and then... Because that was by the time I was 9 or 10 years old. And those were like prime car learning years.
Yeah.
And then I spent a lot of time in that FJ again, because I said it's sitting behind my dad's shop right now, and he drove it to Cars and Coffee and met me there yesterday or Saturday. And then let's see, what my parents own now is, I'm probably going to miss one too. So they have an 05 Sequoia, which is funny because then a customer didn't want to do the repairs on this 05 Sequoia. So my dad took it or bought it off the customer. and it's the same color, the same wheels. It is an SR5. It has leather. So basically you got that that Tundra back, but in Sequoia form. Then they have the 05 Camry still, the FJ40. We have a Project FJ80 that we just got a couple weeks ago. It's again another car that a customer didn't want to. They didn't want to replace the engine on it. Spun a rod, and so we're in the process of putting the engine in that one here soon. And then, let's see, missing a whole bunch. 02 ES330. My sister owns a 99 GS300. We've got an 02 Camry that a customer was done with again. as you can see a pattern here. And then I'm probably missing one or two more.
What is the first car you got into? Like, what is the car you learned to drive in?
The FJ40, actually. Back when I was 9 and 10 years old, up in the Sierra Nevada mountains in 10 feet of snow. I think the statute of limitations is run out on that. But the we'd be driving down the road, and my dad would literally jump into his buddy's Jeep and just say, "Follow us." And I was 10 years old and driving this FJ40. And the funny thing is, he just didn't even worry about it, though, even though there was like a 3,000 side drop off on the left and a 3,000 side mountain on the right. But it's like a roller coaster because the snow, when the snow's 8 feet deep, the trail is basically one lane and it goes straight. So yeah. So that's kind of like where I really first learned to drive. And when my mom found out, she was not that happy. It was the FJ40 where I learned. And then my first car, like I said, was the LS400 that my dad bought back in 2011. He needed a car and bought this LS400, and I got it a few years later, and I still have it now. And that was probably 100,000 miles ago. So it's that's been my baby, and that's why I haven't gotten rid of it.
What I love about Toyotas is you can't kill them, and there's this connection. Like, there are certain brands I think people jive with, and like their kind of lifestyle works with the vehicle. Like, for whatever reason, in my family, Toyotas never work. We've owned a few Toyotas. Like, my parents had a 93 Toyota that was basically, like, broken and in a box by 94. It's actually, like, one of my earliest memories is being on the side of the road pushing that car. like, we're getting out of the car and we're pushing into the Jewel parking lot, and then we're getting rid of this piece of crap. My brother's had issues with Priuses or Prii or whatever the hell you call them. Although that's partly his own fault. But, like, Toyota, especially, like, there's this wonderful era of Toyotas where they weren't trying to... It's, like, right in that where you have the Lexus Toyota coming to the States, where they're not trying to be anyone else. They're not trying to be grounded to the ground or anything. And they have this, this mystique about them. Like, they're just... Oh, that's a Toyota, and that's what it's supposed to look like. And
everyone loves a Mark IV Supra.
Well, right, yeah,
but and that's right there in that frame of what is that? I think it was 92 to 96.
Yeah,
and my LS400. Like, everyone loves the LS400 that knows cars. And that's 89 technically. Mm-hmm. Well, 90 technically, 89 literally. Up until 2000, and
yeah,
Land Cruisers for as long as anyone can remember.
Right. And, like, then they got into this weird, uncanny valley thing when they came out with, like, the FJ Cruiser, and, like, they're building, you know, these giant pickup trucks now, which they're all decent cars, but it's like, you're not what you once were. You're kind of... And maybe this will be something with, like, 10 years of hindsight, we'll look back and go, oh, those were good cars. They were good-looking cars. We just didn't really appreciate them then. But
Those are definitely, like, I really loved the first new Tundra because that was what his first big step into an actual truck. And that's why we ended up – that's why we actually almost had to buy this Tundra because we did a road trip back in 2014, 2 weeks after we bought it, where we towed our Land Cruiser from Tennessee out to California, did a four-wheel drive trip, and towed it back. And it took nearly 2 weeks. But we couldn't have done that with our Sequoia.
Right.
The Tundra got it out here, but we couldn't have done that kind of trip and just hauled butt like that in anything else. And so that was Toyota's first step into that. And I will admit, the 2 years of Toyota I'll probably never buy, or maybe three really, is 07, 08, 09. If you look at Toyota's kind of their model progression, I think it was like three quarters of their models were brand new in 2007, or like at least half. At least half, because they had that was the first year of the Camry, the Tundra. It was the first year of the 3.5 liter engine, mm-hmm. which is now in pretty much everything, including my wife's RX, which she has an 09 RX, and that one, that was like the last sketchy year of the 3.5 liter V6. Yeah. So, like, it just happened to be a really good deal for her. But that was, it was the new Camry, the new Highlander, the new Tundra. The Tacoma hasn't changed in 40 years. That was the FJ Cruiser, actually. That was the first year of that. The new Sequoia was 07. The new Corolla was 07, I believe. Maybe it was a little bit later than that. But, like, when you start looking at it, everything changed over in 07, and that's when they were doing their push to sell as many cars as possible, and it screwed them over. And that's been kind of a rough spot for them. But if it tells you – so this is the car I forgot. I think the word is the piece de resistance is the – my parents have a 2006 RX 400H, and they bought it off a customer 8 months ago. So it's the hybrid. It's the V6 hybrid, and it has 358,000 miles on it on the original hybrid battery. And that's like – so that's just it shows what this car can do. And that was right before that 2007, 2008, 2009 span. Was I love driving that 2006 RX a buttload more than my wife's three-year newer RX 350. More horsepower, V6, and actually a transmission rather than being a CVT. that is the car I love out of all my parents' vehicles, except the FJ40 and the 80, of course. Yeah. But it's just Toyota works. That's the thing. And they have their bad years, and that's why my dad, he opened a shop, and now customers ask him all the time, and he's just don't buy 07, 08, and you're good.
Yep. So let's kind of bring this into, because we're getting a little bit close to the end of time here. So when it comes to then your knowledge outside of Toyota and Lexus, let's go with what is your three favorite cars outside of Toyota and Lexus?
So I was going to say that earlier. Like you said, you kind of grown, like you started as a Chevy person, you branched out. That's kind of happened to me within the last probably 2 to 3 years. And really, it's gone to Porsche, of course, because everyone loves Porsche. But I love the 911. There's something about the 911 that I don't understand.
Well, you like Beatles. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Beatles. Oh, I'll say, I think the most expensive thing I've ever driven was a Porsche 356C. It was a 57, and I drove it for maybe half mile. But that's still stuck in my head. That it's just like, oh my gosh, I drove that one's probably a $300,000 car. Yeah. But there's just something about it. And then it was reinforced, actually. I'll plug some of my articles. I drove a Smart Roadster, Smart Brabus Roadster RCR 101. And those are rear engined, 101 horsepower.
Yep.
And there's something about that rear engine turbo sound behind your head, and the way it feels and the way it handles, it's just, it's different. But the, so I think, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, that's my favorite thing about the new smart cars. Well, not the newest smart cars, because they're moving away from it, but.
Go electric.
Yeah, you can get a smart car right now that has a rear engine, that's manual transmission, and has a convertible top. So you can basically get the cheapest German car you can get that's rear engine, rear wheel drive with a manual transmission is a smart. And then there was a year where you couldn't get a 911 with a manual, but you could get a smart. So there's that.
And one of the cars I'm looking to test, and I'm going to have to talk to the lane. I think it's one of those, there's some cars that are harder to get and some cars that are easier to get, but they have the only ever made 2017 smart Brabus for two with a stick. Yeah. And it was the, yeah, exactly. And it's like this gold kind of, I guess it's gold is really what it is. Gold beige, maybe. But the, it was ordered by Mercedes press people for the press to drive on the release. And that was the only one ever made. And Mercedes gave it to the lane. And I'm like itching to drive that one, especially after I had such fun with the 0.7 liter, the 0.7 liter engine in the Smart Brabus Roadster. I bet the 1 liter in that Smart Brabus or the Smart Brabus for two is going to be quite wonderful, especially with a proper transmission and not the sequential semi-automatic, which was not good.
Yeah, probably one of the worst transmissions ever made.
Yeah, it's not great. I will give it credit. When I was in traffic, I picked it up during my lunch break, took it to work, showed some people during the afternoon, and then on the way home, I was like, why do people like this thing? It's clunky. I'm sitting in traffic. The air conditioner is not working that well. And then the next day I take it on a back road. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I get it.
Yeah,
this is why people must love 911s too.
Yeah, it's that transmission. I've always heard it's like as long as you never have to stop or start, you're good. But other than that, So we're kind of getting
the other. Let me get another two first. Mercedes S-Class.
Good one.
They're big and fancy. And then the, I was going to say Lexus LFA, but that ruins your non-Toyota.
Yeah. Although nice cars. That'd
be hard. Yeah. That's another one that I've seen one. I've never heard one though. I'll have to figure something out to fix that.
Yeah. So we'll go lightning round here since we're getting close to the end of time here. So super fast answer on this one. Best car. Ever.
Oh gosh. It's gonna be like the Bugatti Veyron or Koenigsegg. It's probably gonna have to be a Koenigsegg. Christian von Koenigsegg is crazy, and so he kind of deserves it.
Still, one of my favorite things I've ever saw was him arguing with a Italian man at the New York Auto Show about his car. I know a little bit of Italian because I grew up, my dad immigrated from here and I have family. So I don't speak it, but I kind of understand it a little well. And I was like, I know he's arguing with him about the hybrid system, but I have no idea what the hell he's on about. But it was fun to watch. Worst car ever.
Oh, 918 is probably pretty close.
That is a good one.
Cause it's a Porsche.
Yeah.
So worst car ever made. What if I drove something and I was like, this is awful. it's got to be a Nissan Sentra.
That is a good option. I remember getting into a fairly new one and being like, how do they find this many different shades of black plastic?
Like I said, there's a lot of Nissans I love, but They're two SUVs, and the Sentra are just not good. Mm-hmm.
I will say I prefer the Mirage over the Sentra. Best worst car ever.
Whoa, that's
ever.
Saying a lot. Mm-hmm. Oh, the best worst car. It's going to be an FJ40.
I'm sensing
the
theme.
They are awful. Yeah, but they're tractors. They're almost tractors. So it's still a car, but it's the steering's vague and everything. But it gives you that feeling that you're just like, I'm in something cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's got the one thing you want in a vehicle, which is character and history, which are two things.
Yes, exactly.
But it's the one thing you want. You want the one thing you want is two things. All right, so then we have to conclude this then with
I have driven a 2CV, and those are awful. I forgot about that. I've driven a 2CV and a Renault Dayan. Renault. It's one of those. I think they did both as well, whatever. But those are awful. About the most character of any car ever made.
Yeah. We cut off a bit there on the because the computer's glitching out on me here. They do have the most character. The 2CVs probably do have the most character of any worst car ever. But I would like to drive one for no other reason than to say I have. So let's conclude here with the two most important questions. And one of these is truly, I think, the key to maybe unlocking some fundamental human truth in the universe. Like, you know, when we come to the pure realization of it, we're going to become enlightened and turn into little energy blobs and float around the galaxy. And that question is, and this was in, you had some time to prepare for this one. What is the hardest food to eat while driving?
Well, you said it was a life question, so the 42, of course, but I will concede and say it's cereal.
Your audio just went super weird on me for some reason.
Oh, no. Well, now. Is that better?
It's better. So you said the hardest food to eat while driving is 42. So.
Yeah, well, that's the answer to life, because you said it was a life question.
Yeah.
But,
I get the Hitchhiker's reference. Yeah,
it's going to be cereal.
See, you're going with the easy answer, and that's you can do cereal. Now, I get the Always Sunny reference, too. Cereal, but I've done it because this quickly turns into stupid shit Ike's done in cars. There is a messy component to it that I do give some bonus points for, but anything that you can put in a bowl and drink, I don't think is that hard. Now, especially if you have a see-through cup or glass. I mean, that just makes it all the easier. Ooh.
The new McDonald's burgers aren't easy either, though, because they're actually pretty good, but they're messier.
That is true. I need to get, like, some fast food place to sponsor this show. That's what I need to do. that's the sponsor I need to get. All right, then the other question that will help unlock, you know, the secret to the universe is, what's the hardest makeup to apply while driving?
I think it's going to be eyeliner. Because that's the one that you'll poke yourself in the eye with.
Yep. Eyeliner is good because you have to close the eye and you have the pointed pencil right there on the eye.
Yes. So, yes. Mm-hmm. And I have a wife and a sister. And so I've seen the treachery. Because I'll walk in the bathroom and Nicole will be putting on eyeliner. And if I get anywhere near her, she yells at me because it's a stressful time, apparently. Mm-hmm. Stressful time in a woman's life is putting on eyeliner.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I will concede you that is the second most correct answer we've ever gotten. But unfortunately, the most correct answer we've ever gotten is, and I think will forever be, Juggalo makeup. So,
That'd be difficult. It's kind of messy.
Well, it's not only that, but you got to be high on some sort of drug to be putting it on in the first place.
That's very true. That's very mm-hmm. true.
That's what separates it from typical clown makeup, is the necessity to be high. So,
and they're and to tie it all in, they're probably driving a Nissan Altima.
Probably, yep. Or a Nissan Rogue with just not paying any attention. Also true. This gives me a topic that I need to go in on that someone needs to remind me about in a couple of weeks. But what musical bands are what cars? Because I don't know what the Insane Clown Posse would be, but it would not be
car
pretty.
Can...
Oh, that's too nice of a car. Come on now. Like, what,
that's
what's...
true.
Yeah, because they do what? Is it technically thrash metal? I can't even tell you what the type of music they do.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably say it was Mitsubishi when they were making, like, their the Evo, just all the crazy stuff, and then all the crap stuff. Because in Insane Clown Posse, I would say it was crazy and kind of crap. So
yeah, but magnets, man, how did they work? So yeah, there's got to be something before an alternator because they don't understand magnets. So it needs to be an old school generator. So, Jacob, I want to thank you for coming on the show and joining me this evening. It's been a delight to have you. I'm glad to
Absolutely.
See you coming on board and writing some wonderful articles for the Right Foot Down site. And, you know, where can people find you and find your works?
So, of course, rightfootdown.com /author, whatever. Just click. Actually, I'm not on the author tab yet. But I've written a lot, so you'll see some of my stuff. I think my most recent article was about why the ISF is one of the great road trip vehicles you've never thought about. I took it down to Mobile 2 weekends ago, and I drove it down from Boston when I bought it. So that's my most recent article. Go read that. Then you can find me on Instagram at the Arm in Hammer. just keep it simple, kind of like it's the and then the brand. So I'll get sued one day. And then Twitter at Jake Arnheimer. Good luck spelling that. Find it on Right Foot Down. And I think that's about it. Of course, Oppo as the Oppo's resident Lexus guy. So that's pretty much covers all the bases.
All right. We should be good to go then, I think. So I'm going to have to pick your brain. You're coming. I'm trying to go in my mind here. You're coming to our little meetup down there, right? The Opposite Lock meet at the Dragon, right? You're going to be there?
Sadly, I was, and then I looked at my calendar, and I'm in the Dominican Republic that weekend for me. So I know I was.
Shame.
I had many sads when I saw that, but I will
Shame.
Be. If anybody's in Nashville, feel free to hit me up. I'm a volunteer at the Lane Motor Museum, so I get. Funds, I don't really get access, but they let me walk around a little bit more and show people stuff, which is always fun, and they're super sweet about it. And then I'm usually at Cars and Coffee on Saturdays here, so just let me know if you'll be there and we can get together.
So again, we'll put all your little social media stuff into the description here, so if you want to go and follow you, that's the place to do it. So Jacob, I'm going to say goodbye to you off air. For everyone listening, make sure you go check out his work and his social media, and I will be right back with you after the break.